Listeners like you make living on Earth possible each week. Please contribute today by clicking on the donate link to the left of the page. And thanks.
The cult classic Godzilla was made at the dawn of the atomic age.
Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination.
Godzilla was born of an atomic blast. The movie is a cautionary story from the nation where nuclear weapons were first used.
Now let's have it, Steve. What about this monster story of yours?
Well, it's big and terrible.
Now, fast forward to Japan in March 2011. Another nuclear character makes the scene. He's Nuclear Boy, born of the crisis at the Fukushima power plant. Nuclear Boy stars in an animated video that's gone viral. He's a little boy with a stomachache. He represents a sick nuclear power plant. When Nuclear Boy passes gas, he's emitting radiation. And doctors worry he might poop, which would be a meltdown. The video has English subtitles, which is good because I don't speak Japanese. Nor does my guest, John Carroll. John Carroll is a professor of mass communication at Boston University. We asked him to help analyze some films from the golden era of atomic energy and Nuclear Boy.
When I first saw this, I thought, this is really a concept with a capital K. But when you put it in context of Japanese society, it actually makes a little bit more sense. And when you put it in the context of playing it for kids, then it does a pretty good job of describing what's actually going on there. I mean, the language that they use is language that, on the surface anyway, downplays the danger. You know, it talks about ruining your day, smelling up the neighborhood, that kind of thing. But and the whole bowel movement thing is something that I think is pretty foreign to the American public. But I think that it's something that kids can identify with, kids can understand, and I think that it at least explains what's happening in general terms, so they have some kind of orientation.
Well, let's play a little bit more of Nuclear Boy. Basically, what they're saying is the Three Mile Island was an incident where there was a lot of gas was being passed, and Chernobyl Boy had diarrhea.
アメリカのスリーマイル島ってとこでも大きなおならが出ちゃったことがあったけど、チェルノブイリちゃん、あれは本当に大事故。
Kind of an upbeat message there, John.
Yeah, it's basically saying this: whatever happens, it's not going to be as bad as Chernobyl. So, so that's encouraging to everybody. I think that this is it's weird until you start to think back in terms of what we had back in the 50s. For instance, we had Bert the Turtle in a duck and cover video, which basically said what to do when the atom bomb falls is to duck and cover and try and get under a table. So that was even more ridiculous than what we have here with Nuclear Boys.
But, you know, kids back in the 50s were getting a heavy dose of information at the dawn of the nuclear era. I want you to listen to this one. It's a familiar tune.
When you wish upon a star.
So they have the Wonderful World of Disney signature tune, and what you've got here is a way to try to give kids some orientation, a way to give them a comfort level. They can relate it to Walt Disney.
The atom is our future. It is a subject everyone wants to understand. So we felt it was the most important topic for a Tomorrowland program.
Yeah, Walt Disney was a big proponent of nuclear power.
I think he was a big proponent of the future in general. That was, the future was good for business for him.
We made plans to build an exhibit at Disneyland that will show you atomic energy in action.
Well, let's call it manipulation or propaganda, I guess, right?
You could call it propaganda to some degree. I mean, it's not that it was entirely untrue. It's just that there was this sort of techno-optimism that they evoked all the time. It puts things in a context that downplays the potential dangers and plays up the potential benefits of atomic energy.
Hey, John, did you ever see Ready Kilowatt? That was the industry's commercial for promoting nuclear power way back when.
I wash and dry your clothes, play your radios, I can heat your coffee.
I love Ready Kilowatt.
I am always there with lots of power to spare, 'cause I'm Ready Kilowatt.
He was just the kind of guy that was an excellent mascot, and I can say he was always welcome in our home.
Well, this was a film from the 50s by the Armed Forces Special Weapons Project, and basically it was kind of downplaying the medical concerns people had about radiation exposure.
The estimated dose needed to bring about permanent sterility exceeds the lethal dose. So obviously sterility by radiation would be just incidental, a matter a dead man wouldn't worry about.
That's very comforting, isn't it? Don't worry, you'll be dead way before you're sterile. The tone of this video is very odd. It's very sort of insidery. It's very jokey. They say at one point the best protection against atomic explosions is to be somewhere else when they happen. That's setting the bar pretty low there.
The United States isn't alone in producing these kinds of films by a long stretch. I want you to listen to this. I know you don't speak Russian, but you don't need to know what it's saying, I think, to get the message. This is from 1977, and it takes place in Ukraine.
Chernobyl. Yeah, there I'm picking up the phone and calling Charlie Schwab and saying, buy me some futures in Chernobyl. I mean, that kind of thing is how all these enterprises start out. They always start out with this optimism, with this sort of sunny side up view of what's going to happen. And sometimes they play out and sometimes they don't. I'm sure Three Mile Island had a nice little groundbreaking, too.
John, what were we thinking back then? Were we more gullible? Were we more naive?
I think we were more trusting, for one thing. I think there was a trust in the government, in particular, in major institutions that we don't have now. There wasn't that much competition back then, so they could essentially establish a narrative that would take hold because there was no counter narrative that was being put forward. If you put some of this stuff out now, what you would have is Greenpeace all over them. You would have the blogs critiquing them. You would have parody videos on YouTube. I mean, what you had back then was it was much easier to go out and establish a context and to convince people to see things from a particular perspective because of the way the media landscape was constructed.
What do you think would be an effective way of talking about nuclear energy today?
There are a couple of ways. I mean, I think that one of the interesting things about Nuclear Boy over in Japan was that it was crowdsourced, that it was something that didn't come from some authority figure. It was something that came from the people and to solve a particular problem. And I think if you had more of that sense, more of that sense of things coming up from the bottom rather than coming down from the top, you could establish some kind of credibility. But I think that's the way to go, is to create a conversation and try to go from there rather than this sort of authoritarian voice that no longer has the credibility, no longer has the authority, and no longer has the trust of a large part of the American public.
Well, John, it's always a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bruce.
John Carroll is a professor of mass communication at Boston University. His blog is campaignoutsider.com.
Remember, just plug in. I'm ready.
Living on Earth is produced by the World Media Foundation. Our crew includes Bobby Bascom, Eileen Belinsky, Ingrid Lobet, Helen Palmer, Jessica Elise Smith, Ike Shriskandaraja Mitrataj, and Jeff Young, with help from Sarah Calkins and Sammy Souza. Our interns are Sean Falk and Wynn Tucker. Jeff Turton is our technical director. Allison Lirish-Dean composed our themes. You can find us anytime at loe.org. And while you're online, check out our sister program, Planet Harmony. Planet Harmony welcomes all and pays special attention to stories affecting communities of color. Log on and join the discussion at myplanetharmony.com. And don't forget to check out the LOE Facebook page. It's PRI's Living on Earth. Steve Kerwood is our executive producer. I'm Bruce Gellerman. Thanks for listening.
Funding for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation, supporting coverage of emerging science. And Stonyfield Farm, organic yogurt and smoothies. Stonyfield pays its farmers not to use artificial growth hormones on their cows. Details at stonyfield.com. Support also comes from you, our listeners. The Ford Foundation, the Town Creek Foundation, the Oak Foundation, supporting coverage of climate change and marine issues. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve a chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org. and Pax World Mutual Funds, integrating environmental, social, and governance factors into investment analysis and decision-making. On the web at paxworld.com. Pax World, for tomorrow.
PRI, Public Radio International.